Hello, I'm Nicole Swanson, and welcome to Forza Tutti, the podcast by Zircon Arts, where we explore the power of creativity and collaboration at the intersection of the arts, education, public policy, and social justice. The episode you're about to hear was part of a series entitled The Intentional Effective Music Teacher. It was recorded in the spring of 2020, near the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. I would love to hear your thoughts on this conversation. Send me an email at nicole@zirconarts.com. And now, on with the show. Welcome back to The Intentional Effective Music Teacher. Today, our guest is Tom Hammam. He's a professor at UMass Amherst, and he has a lot to share.
How did your musical journey begin? Take us back to the beginning.
Oh, my. well, yeah, it's probably not... a very typical journey. I grew up in a very urban, suburban setting just outside of Philadelphia. And at that time, there were a lot of drum and bugle corps that were kind of civic-oriented or associated with maybe churches or, you know, CYO groups or VFW posts or American Legion posts. And so there's a lot of these drum corps that were very, very localized. And my brother and sister were in this local drum corps, the Brookhaven Crusaders. And I was 5 years old. And so my parents would take me to the practices and whatnot. And I was kind of infatuated with looking at the drummers, you know, and just watching what that was. And so I kept going because my father was one of the assistant directors of this this particular group. So, you know, we would load the drums into our house after the rehearsal and then load them back out and, you know, take them to and from. And so I'm just a little guy. I'm just tagging along. And but there was a lot of people in our neighborhood, like in this sort of block that we lived on. There's probably about 15 people that were doing this. So it was, you know, a very comfortable thing, I think, for everybody to partake in. And so I did that. I followed it and just kept going to the practices. I eventually joined the rookie corps, and then I eventually joined the big corps, you know, and and that was when I was 10. So I just kind of did that, and there was no real music program to speak of in the elementary school, the grammar school, I guess, because I went to a Catholic grammar school for eight years. And then the high school I went to, they really, the music program was very, very little, to the point where they survived by bringing people from the outside in to sort of create a small band. So I remember in 10th grade going to the band director going, hey, you know, I think I'd like to try to take the theory class. Yeah, maybe I can try to learn how to read music because I couldn't read music. So, and he was not necessarily hearing much of that, and he pretty much, and I, you know, he kind of said, "Well, you kind of have to know how to read to be in it." And I took him at his word, and that was it. And I walked away, and that was that. So, you know, I was really never with any formal training or lessons in that way. It was all through the drum corps, and we learned by rote. And, and I couldn't read music when I went to college, and but I joined the marching band at Westchester State University, or Westchester University now, in Pennsylvania. Very, very well-known music education school, and they were kind enough to look the other way on my audition. I auditioned my sophomore year, at the end of my freshman year, because my friend said, hey, you know, you have a really good tonal memory, you can hear things, and you learn fast. And so so I got in and started the music program, and it was, oh my Lord, it was, I mean, everything, Nicole, everything I experienced was completely new. There was nothing that I came in contact with that I went, oh yeah, I remember seeing that or hearing that. Nothing. So, so that, you know, but I said, you know, I want to do this because I knew I wanted to teach. And so when I first went to school, college, I was in secondary education history because I liked history. So, but I obviously switched over to music, and, you know, I was persistent and I withstood the frankly, the humiliation of being embarrassed about really not knowing anything.
Yeah.
And I had a plan, and yep. I was able to follow through, and I had good friends that helped me. So I was lucky there, and I got out, and I was teaching drum corps. I was the last drum corps I taught was the Crossmen, and they're very good, and they hired me on to teach the percussion section when I got out, and that was while I was still at Westchester. So I was actually beginning to, you know, put the pieces together, and George Parks, who was the band director at the University of Massachusetts, called me in my senior year and asked me if I wanted to be, you know, a grad teaching assistant, and I'm like, well, I have no idea, because I wasn't really thinking that way. And so, you know, give me a couple of days to think about it. And so I'm like, I've got nothing to lose and everything to gain. So I called him back and said, I'm ready. So came up here to Amherst in the fall of 1980, and I am still here.
Yeah.
So I have not moved along. And it's been great, you know. The area is fantastic, and you know, I was blessed because after I did my master's here, they created a position for me to teach the band, and so I did that and stuck with it, and the position evolved over time and become a really gratifying experience. So.
So what is the scope of your responsibilities currently, or let's go ahead and talk pre-COVID-19, because obviously right now everything has changed.
Sure.
But, you know, in theory, what is, you know, what do you do at Amherst?
Well, I guess my title is that of Associate Marching Band Director. And, you know, so there's obviously any number of administrative tasks that go along with that. But primarily, you know, I was initially came up here to do the percussion section. And so when they hired me on, they really kind of kept that intact as being my focus area. And what a blessing, because I was really allowed to become, if I don't say so myself, quite good at the art of marching percussion, because I was afforded the opportunity through my position here at the university, and in conjunction with what I was doing off campus with the drum corps and eventually clinics and things, I was able to really focus on that particular side of percussion. And so that is kind of how I got my foot in the door. And then I was doing the basketball pep band thing, and and I started doing some lessons here and there as I was integrating in with the studio percussion area. And this fellow Peter Tanner was the percussion teacher, and I asked him, "Hey, would you mind if I started like a second marimba ensemble?" Because he did this marimba ensemble, which I was infatuated with, and it's really cool. And so he's like, "Yeah, sure, go ahead." So we kind of put that together. So over the course of time, it's gotten to the point where I do five of these groups. I do, you know, three marimba ensembles and two marimba bands, which we don't need to get into. And it's,
how many marimba students are there?
Well, there's a lot.
Yeah.
And this is where the good fortune of, honestly, having been successful in ways with the drum corps activity, it sort of enhanced my standing with people in the percussion industry.
Sure.
And in particular, in this case, if we're talking about marimbas, with the Pearl Corporation, Pearl and Adams, who are from Nashville, I've been associated with them as a clinician and a consultant for about 38 years or so. And But over time, we got to a point where they were gracious enough to kind of, you know, help us out with acquiring instruments and basically building up our inventory to the point where we could actually do these groups and a multitude of the groups, you know, not just one. So there's a lot of keyboard instruments here on campus, and honestly, through their generosity, Pearl Adams, it's really enabled a facet of the percussion program to not only develop but evolve and and really stretch out. So
that's really cool.
It's been really neat because it's been a very creative project, I guess, really. There's really no, we write our own music. A lot of times, you know, the students are doing a lot of the arrangements or alumni. So it's really like what we're doing, there's not a lot of literature out there that's of the nature that we're looking for. So they write it, they teach it, they perform it. And I think, you know, that's kind of the backbone of a lot of the things that go on here in the area that I'm more directly involved with. And I think those three things they're really important. I think, you know, of course, most collegiate, you know, music students are performing. Some of them might have an ability or not an ability, but an opportunity to teach as part of their experience. You know, some more than others, and but not as many write. You know, it's a time-consuming task. It's you have to be inspired, and you have to have a vehicle, an outlet, and these groups provide that. It's been very, very rewarding. You know, for to see them grow in different ways. So, pretty cool.
And so, just to clarify, the students who participate in these ensembles—they are music majors, or are some of them music minors or non-music majors who participate in music programs? What's the breakdown there?
Yeah. Well, I would say this: I have the luxury of teaching the masses and the individuals. So, you know, I'm kind of out there doing, you know, large scale groups, and I also get into doing the private lessons as well. So it's a great mixture. To answer your question specifically, there are both majors and non-majors that are in these ensembles.
Okay.
And which I think is a strength.
Right.
You know, because I think music is hopefully for everybody. And, you know, they're held to a standard, and it's amazing to see how they raise their level to that. You know, your program here is intentional teaching and effective teaching. And I think it's both, they go together, but they're not, you know, you could do one without the other. You can have an intention, and maybe that who knows about the effectiveness of it. But
and you can be accidentally effective.
this is true. I may have experienced a number of those situations.
Yep, I think we all have.
But you know, it's a pretty structured. I think because I deal with the masses, my overview of things is that. You know, the fundamentals are critical. They're essential to developing people of all levels, and because that's what I'm teaching. I'm not just teaching, I guess, gifted students, or I'm not just teaching students that are, you know, more remedial or intermediate. You know, there's a whole wide gamut. So I think the importance of the fundamentals is critical to the programs here, and it's by design. And it has proven to be a really fantastic experience for all of the students, regardless of what their major is.
Right.
There's sort of a common expectation, and honestly, we don't really deviate from it. They know what they're getting into when they're signing up for this stuff. And I think it's cool because it's rooted in their dedication. They know that that's going to be the expectation. And perhaps that word, expectation, is a big part of intentional teaching.
Yep.
You know, knowing what the expectation is and how to communicate it, then probably ultimately knowing how to generate a response so that the expectation is met. And that would be the effective part.
So in terms of this expectation thing here, I don't know if maybe you can think of an example in one of your ensembles. I assume part of it is, you know, maybe returning students and just having kind of developed the culture that self-perpetuates. But, you know, for a new student, you know, you say they know what they're getting into when they start. How do they know?
Well, yes. They know because it's spelled out for them at the outset of the semester.
Okay.
You know, so, and it's not complicated. It's a very, you know, it's not as if there's, you know, a list of, you know, 10 things or something, but it's mostly, I do think when the kids are talking with each other, they know, well, you know, what's Hannum like, you know, and so they talk, of course. And
mm-hmm.
so they know that there's going to be, it's a very direct, there's not a lot of, you know, frills to it. It's not that we don't try to have fun, because we do, but
mm-hmm.
it's almost like if we're showing the effort to achieve the standard,
yeah,
then we can have our fun, you know?
Right.
And, but you know, it really is based off of, it's kind of these four things. And I say this in particular with like having built the marching percussion program. It's attendance. I call it the four A's. It's
okay.
Attendance, it's attitude, it's your mental ability,
hmm.
and it's your physical ability. So,
okay.
And it's in that order of importance,
yeah.
You know, and so being there is the most important thing. You have to participate. And so that's been at the backbone of everything that we do. So they know that. And in a lot of cases, it's a tough, it can be an uncomfortable lesson for some kids that are not accustomed
right.
to it, because, you know, they're used to sort of dancing around this, and I got this study session. I got, no, this is what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and for them, they're making that commitment to toe the line, and that's important. And then, you know, then we kind of talk about the attitude, and, you know, as we all know, that can be contagious, and
yeah.
And well, it is contagious,
yep.
and it's going
to operate.
For better
or for worse.
It's going to operate one way or the other. So
yeah.
we try to do our best to have it, you know, direct towards the positive. And
mm-hmm.
I would have to say it's a pretty, you know, it's a structured environment. And so
right.
you have to be okay with that. And if you're looking for something that's, a little loose and a little more slanted towards the individual, it might be not exactly, you know, easy for you to adapt. So,
mm-hmm.
but I think the structure is big. I mean, I think everybody craves it.
Yeah.
Again, I know that, you know, our current way of doing things is to sort of, as we talked earlier, you know, maybe try to develop the individual expressive part of people's, you know, personalities and skill sets, which is all important. But
right.
I do think it's kind of like theme and variation. We got to
yep.
get the theme first.
Right.
Then we can work on the variations.
Yeah.
Know? So that's, you know, their ability to sort of comply, I think, is the theme.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's one thing that, you know, people who continue in music for the long term, that's one thing that we love about it, is the fact that, like, you can be part of something. Like, obviously you have to do your own part, but you can be this little cog in the entire system that overall is greater than you as an individual, you know? So
yeah.
I think, yeah, like you said, the individual skills are important, but the group skills are important
yeah.
too, and you can't teach the group skills without that structure.
Yeah, for me, I think that the student leadership part of things is important, and it's not that we overstate that, but I think for them to have ownership of their groups
mm-hmm.
is very, 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 very important. And you know, as opposed to everything being spelled out for them and everything
right.
being, you know, so laid out that all they're doing is following.
Yeah.
You know, it's You know, that's what's nice about them doing some of the teaching and the writing, and
mm-hmm.
you know, it develops a whole other sense of ownership
yep.
over what they're doing. So, well, I
yeah.
think people, they enjoy experiencing a sense of pride. You know,
yeah.
it develops pride about being around your friends, being around your fellow musicians, and that's a powerful. It's a powerful quality or trait in any group, you know, and it really helps to sort of self-motivate the students because they feel good about what they're doing and they feel good about doing it with people. And otherwise you could remain in your practice room
right.
and, you know, go crazy as an individual. You can
mm-hmm.
practice countless hours, but it's about getting in, and the music ultimately is about the communication between performers, and you have to be together to work on that skill, and you know, through that you communicate with the audience, and hopefully the final piece is the audience returns that
right.
to the performers, and now you have an actual experience.
Yep.
You know, so. But they all kind of go together.
Yeah, absolutely. If we could pivot a little bit, you have written and developed an actual curriculum for percussionists. Is it specifically for marching percussionists? Can you tell us a little bit more about this?
Sure. Well, to say it's a curriculum might be a little overstated, but there
okay.
are elements. There are, I think there are elements of what are, you know, documented and put down that are components of a curriculum. And I think a couple things specifically is there's a book that teaches rhythm. It's called A Percussionist's Guide to Check Patterns.
Okay.
And Alfred Publications puts it out. I think it was released maybe 10 years ago or so.
Okay.
But it really focuses in on the A, B, and C's of fundamental rhythm. And we dig into it pretty hard here, and it's not very glamorous, but it's extremely important. And
okay.
boy, when they kind of go through this, they are far better readers, and they are far better able to manage the feeling and coordination of syncopations, and you know, all of what's involved in, you know, not only percussion, but wind instruments, you know, it's critical. We spend a lot of time on intonation and tone production and things like that in band, but if we're not doing it together,
yeah,
you know, you're gonna have issues, right? So
yeah.
it kind of gets to the heart of that. But that's the one big thing, and that's a big one, is the rhythm as it relates to the pulse. So that book kind of addresses that. And then I've done a couple books that are marching percussion driven,
okay.
but I'd like to think that the content that's in there is just kind of universal percussion skills.
Mm-hmm.
It's not very advanced. They really are not that advanced, the exercises and things that appear in the books, but it's called Championship Concepts for Marching Percussion. So there's the title, which
mm-hmm.
will direct it that way, but it's by Hal Leonard, and there's a workbook, student workbook, and then like a main text that goes with it. And it's really, really basic stuff, Nicole, but it's necessary stuff. And so
to what you were talking about even before, about how, like, regardless of if you're a music major or if you're a non-major, like, if you're going to play together, like, there has to be that baseline skill. And so making sure that this fundamental foundation is there, my question is, what inspired you to develop these books? Did you found that, like, there wasn't something like that out there, or that these were skills that you had amassed over the years and you wanted to put them somewhere so that you could use it as a resource? How did that
yeah.
come about?
Well, when I was doing my master's thesis, I was initially trying to do it on researching snare drum method books.
Okay.
And I pivoted away from that, which is a different story, but I kind of got into, you know, looking through these method books and, you know, sort of trying to understand what the, I guess the progression was that was delivered. And so at any rate, doing a lot of teaching, and I would be out doing these camps, you know, doing these workshops and camps in the summertime, especially. And there would be a lot of kids there. So we're looking for, in those days, it was like, oh, yeah, you're writing the exercises out. You're making copies and you're giving them to everybody. So there's stuff blowing around all over the place. And, you know, and this, you know, and I mean, seriously, it's like it really is necessity is the mother of invention. And,
yeah.
But I was lucky enough to get a call from Robert W. Smith. He worked at Columbia Pictures Publications, and he's like, I want you to do a video that would last one class period long and cover, you know, what you might feel are the basic skills that you would need to do like a percussion class, you know, a drumline class, actually. So I wrote up the exercises, and I was using those exercises before the video was published in some summer camps at Westchester and other places. And I went, you know what, this needs to kind of be put in a book.
Yep.
And so that it can be used in conjunction with the video, and it makes my life easier in the summertime. So all these different hands-on workshops I would do. And that's kind of how it came together. So it has like 10 exercises in there that are, again, very basic, fundamental stuff. But if you're going to be a percussionist, you can't skip these. And oddly enough, there's percussion majors here at school that they struggle with some of these things, you know, because they probably weren't required or asked to do them in their developmental stages. And so, you know, there's that in there. There's the rudiments appear in there. There's this check pattern reading rhythms system that appears in this book, you know, and in its pretty skeletal form. And there's other stuff that talks about musicianship, some pages on cymbal playing, and it's a little bit of a sampling of I don't want to say everything, but it kind of touches on most of the instruments. So, it's the best bargain in town. It's like $5.95.
Oh, seriously? Wow.
I'm serious. And
that's
like,
amazing.
I would say to any aspiring band director, if they want to get something in their hands that can help them communicate vocabulary to their percussion kids, you know, this is it's a great thing because there's mallet stuff that's in there, and yeah, it really is. So it was almost like one thing did lead to the next in terms of how this came to fruition. The reading book was just kind of a passion of mine, these rhythm patterns, check patterns. And I just went, you know, this kind of just needs to be done in my opinion. And so, as with a lot of projects I do, I may have overcooked it a little bit.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it kind of, it's like you want to be thorough and all that, and it's like, well, not everybody's interested in being completely thorough. They want to have it be effective, right?
Right.
So, again, going back to your, you know, so intentionally thorough, maybe trying to be, I don't know if the effective part came into play, but it's a great book. I mean, like what we get out of it here at the university is pretty unbelievable. And what I've seen other people do has been amazing. It's one of those things you do have to commit to it.
And it's interesting to me that you're talking about, you know, going back to the basic book with the fundamental skills and how, you know, some of your collegiate students struggle with that. And going back to your initial story about how you came into college without some of these skills that other people would think of as, you know, entirely fundamental. And I think that's one of the big challenges of music teaching is, you know, you have limited time, right?
Right.
And
right.
But there are so many different areas that you want to, that you want and need to address in order to develop a well-rounded musician. And I think it's this constant struggle between what are my strengths as a teacher and where else can I then send these students to fill in the gaps that perhaps are not my strengths, but also trying to address all of it. I don't know if you can speak to that a little bit.
Well, I might not be thinking exactly kind of how you're, I think what you might be
sort of
hinting at, but I will say this. As you were talking, it made me think, boy, if you're teaching, you have to find some time, a consistent period of time, every rehearsal or every whatever it is that you're doing, where you are dedicating time to the fundamentals, the development of fundamental technique, or fundamental reading, whatever your cup of tea is that you feel mm-hmm. like you need to sort of focus on. But I think it has to be done. If it's not done, I think we're only kidding ourselves. We wind up, there's an inclination, I think, to begin to just teach to the test, you know, where we're just preparing music so that we can go out and do the concert.
Right.
And then when that concert's done, then we do the next cycle of music, and it's great. It's fun and it has its reward. But if the students are going to actually progress, they have got it somehow. You know, if you have, I don't know, you've got a 45-minute rehearsal, can we dedicate 15 of it to fundamental development? You know, either sound production or rhythm or reading or how to play accents or whatever it is that you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
But because I think in the end what happens is not only do they play the music better, it takes less time to do it.
Yeah.
Because they have a facility that otherwise is not being explored. It's not being developed. And it's funny because we do it, I kind of do it both ways at school. I mean, it's like these marimba groups, we don't sit and do the technique, but we don't in those situations because most all of those students are in the springtime, we have this marching percussion techniques class.
Okay.
And there's, like, for instance, this semester, there's 58 students in this class.
Wow.
And it's wildly popular. And it's now this is part of the culture thing of, if you're going to be in the percussion section for the marching band, they just all do it. They know they're expected to do it, and so they all sign up and do it. And it's two times a week. And, we also have prospective drum majors who want to be in there, and we have music ed students who want to be in there. And then we have other kids from the other parts of the band who just, they want to kind of, sample it. And, so that, again, here's that. We're teaching to the masses of students with zero experience to the very finest players. And but that class exists. And so a lot of these skill sets that I think are important, they are taught in this spring class. It allows us to not have to necessarily cover these as part of, we have an hour and 15-minute rehearsal, so 20 minutes of it's dedicated to fill in the blank.
Right.
We can kind of, we're filling in the blank in this particular class. So we're very lucky in that regard. So,
yeah.
But I would have to say to any director, somehow you've got to find that time because I think ultimately in the end, it opens up more time for you to do the music.
Yeah.
It really does. So.
And then the question, ultimately in the end, when your students leave, so you work with college students, and ultimately they will leave and either they will go into grad school or they will go into the workforce and some of them may go into music and some of them may not. I mean, maybe this is too big of a question, but I'm going to throw it to you anyway. What is your goal for these students to leave you with?
Well, I there's probably a few things. I think the big thing is I want them to know how to work together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because regardless of what field they go into, you're going to have to be able to do that.
Yep.
And it's an important skill, and you have to realize, you know, you may not agree with everybody who's in your job, you may not agree with anybody who's in your band, you might not agree with everybody who's in your classroom, whatever it is, but
mm-hmm.
You have to learn how to work with people, and I think it's a great skill to
yep.
to nurture, and so that to me is big. I think the premise of respecting people
mm-hmm.
and respecting the music is vital, because sometimes what I see is in certain situations, I'm sure we've all encountered it, but some music gets respected and some music maybe not.
Right.
Well, you know, I'm not into that one. The best musicians that I've ever encountered in my life, and I've been lucky to be around some of the very best people for any variety of reasons, most of it either through my affiliations with the percussion industry or in doing clinics where I've been fortunate to be around some of the best people out there. And it has always seemed to me, and it struck me very early on in my career, the better the musician, the more at ease they are with accepting any wide variety of musical genre. Like, they don't care. They you know what I mean? They're not out there judging it. Maybe it's just because they're so comfortable in their own skin. They're like, I'm good with it. I'm good with whatever. And they tend to see the good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm hoping to get the kids that I deal with is like, you know, all music is good. You know, some of it's going to be easier than others. Some of it's going to be more challenging. Some of it's going to require more time. It doesn't mean that it has less value, and I think the respect of the music, I think, is big for
mm-hmm.
me. And when they get out, well, hopefully they will have learned how to think for themselves.
Yeah.
Though the program here is admittedly very structured and is not it's not necessarily inviting a lot of opinion, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, let's have you execute the plan here. Now, once
right.
you're done, you know, do with it whatever you want. But
yeah.
I hope that what it does is it encourages them to know how to think and use their brain. Because, you know, as you remember, I wouldn't go back to it, was like attendance, attitude, mental ability.
Yep.
Because these kids, they are required to be able to be in a rehearsal, focus
yep.
on the conductor or the teacher, and there's no jockeying around. I mean, it's we're in there. It's a very quiet kind of atmosphere environment. It tends to read seriously, and you know, that's just kind of how I am, I guess. That's what works for me. It doesn't mean that it should be that way for everybody, and it's certainly not right for everybody. But
mm-hmm.
I think it does get them they're challenged to think about things and to focus
right.
on details. And as we know, you know, the devil's in the details, and they gotta be willing to go there. And you know, my thing is like, what is your mental commitment? Well, it's your ability to focus on specific guidelines, evaluate your level of achievement,
mm-hmm.
make adjustments when necessary.
Yep.
Like that's the self-learning process.
Yep.
So details, evaluation, adjustment.
Yep.
And if you're doing it great, repeat it. You know, if you're not right. So put in the big repeat sign. That's cool, you know.
Yeah.
So that's where you want to get. You know.
There you go.
But I think it's because, you know, through that you're building habits. And that's what I constantly say to them. Look, guys, we're building habits all the time here. So you know, my job is to try to build good habits for you,
yep.
so that you can think about the next thing that I'm going to ask you to do.
Yep.
And then we do enough repetitions and build good habits that now we go to the next thing. And so
yep.
it's this constant layering and progression in terms of how they're expected to learn.
That's great. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's it for today. What did you find most intriguing about this conversation? Was it his emphasis on fundamentals or the expectations that he sets for his students or the process in publishing books and videos or something else entirely? As always, I'd love to hear from you, and I'll talk to you again tomorrow.